Here we are again, Growth Gets It podcast. We're talking about some really timely stuff. We usually try to make this a little bit of a lighter kind of episode, kind of recording, but I think we're going to take a turn more to the serious end because of what the topic is today. And the topic is Daryl Brooks Jr., because the trial is happening. It's in Waukesha County. Judge Doro and Ryan, well, here, let me go back. I'm jumping right in here. I apologize. So let me go back. We have Mitch Rosh, attorney, and Ryan Harrington, attorney, who are our special guests today, always our special guests. And what we're talking about is the Waukesha jury trial that's happening right now as we speak. I mean, it's literally going on. They're at lunch break right now, I'm guessing, or some kind of break right now. But you know, this recording probably will get edited and then sent over and probably updated early next week. So it's not going to be as timely as it could be, but it's just interesting to talk about and how this relates to our world, which is the civil world. So I don't know, Mitch, do you know which judge it's in front of?
I don't know.
Judge Doro? Have you ever appeared before Judge Doro?
I have not, no.
Waukesha County judge. And Ryan, what other roles does Judge Doro have?
Well, she's the chief judge for Waukesha County as well as the district. And I used to have an office for about 15 years, 5 minutes from the Waukesha County Courthouse. So I know Jennifer Doro well. She's an excellent jurist. She's highly respected. She runs an efficient courtroom. And as you can see, she's trying to keep this trial on schedule as much as she can, which is extremely difficult when you have a defendant like Mr. Brooks, who is just hell-bent at every turn to delay the proceedings and just run this case off the rails if he can.
Well, and that's the news today. We were just looking up on our phones. Today's shirtless day in the courthouse. I mean, he comes and he has his orange jumpsuit on, then takes his shirt off, and he's literally shirtless. It's not like he has a t-shirt. It's just shocking to even say these out loud, that he's in a trial for his life.
And I don't know why he showed up in an orange jumpsuit. Up until today, he's been showing up in a suit, which is what you would expect. I mean, you don't want to present that image to a jury of someone in an orange jumpsuit, certainly. Yeah. But it just seems like he doesn't care about shooting himself in the foot at every chance he can get.
Well, and that's a good point. So Mitch, in trial prep, do you have conversations with your clients about how to present themselves, what to wear?
Oh, certainly. Yeah.
Yeah. So would you recommend coming shirtless?
Yes, of course. It's perfectly fine to show up with no shirt at court.
Maybe paint your chest, show up with face paint even. Yeah.
Not guilty or for our world, pay us the limits. I don't know what you'd say.
Show
in your
up and painted in green with dollar signs.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
No, definitely show up, you know, looking good as well as you can. Dress up. Sometimes it's, you know, we might tell a client not to dress up too nice, depending on the jurisdiction. But yeah, definitely come looking like you belong there.
So that's a good point. So you just reminded me years ago, this has to be 15, not 20 years ago, but close, between 15 and 20 years ago. I had a client who we talked about what this client should wear, and this client was a male, and this was a long time ago, so I'm not even sure if the client's still alive, but this particular person, we talked about coming to the courthouse and wearing, you know, pants, not shorts, not jeans, slacks. Go to Kohl's and get some Dockers or whatever you can, but don't wear jeans, don't have holes in them. Wear a nice shirt, a button down, you know, all that kind of stuff. And what's that kind of tie? It's a bolo?
Oh, yeah. Bolo tie.
A bolo tie? B-O-L-O or something. You know what a bolo tie is? It's like the
They wear
cord.
It out west a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like just like the rope around your neck with like a...
like a rhinestone or something.
A rhinestone, or like maybe like a head of a cattle or something, or, you know, some kind of whatever. So he wanted approval to wear that. And I said, that's fine. I think that should be okay. And then we talked about jewelry. And I said, well, I would not wear a lot of jewelry because you don't want to look like, you know, you're this, you know, big player or
no
somebody
Rolexes.
Who has not a lot of money, because we're asking for money. And well, also the claim was you were out of work. So how can you have all this money? People might just start assuming that you're doing things illegally or whatever, you know? So let's not even put that in the equation. Let's keep that out of the equation. So this is what you should wear. So first day of trial, client comes, he's wearing the pants, the shirt, fine, except he must have had 5-carat diamond studs in each of his ears. They were fake, but they were the biggest diamonds that I've ever seen a guy, or even maybe a woman other than Kim Kardashian, or I don't know who.
Zsa Zsa Gabor.
Well,
dating ourselves.
Dating, oh my gosh.
I didn't know who that
is. She has no idea who that is.
Over my head on that one.
I don't know if the person who's editing this is going to even know how to spell Zsa Zsa Gabor. But yeah, it's like, I was like, hey, I don't understand. It's like, well, I wore my sensible ones because they aren't they weren't dangly or some excuse. I'm like, are you serious?
Sensible diamonds.
Sensible.
It's a contradiction in
diamond
terms.
Diamond studs. For those. Unbelievable. So that's the other extreme, that you know, you have a shirtless guy on your one side and then the guy wearing diamonds on the other side. Anyway.
Well, one of Doro's colleagues in Waukesha County, Ralph Ramirez, I've seen him actually remove or have defendants removed from the courtroom or litigants removed when they show up wearing shorts or any sort of attire that he considers inappropriate for the court. You know, yeah. If you show up in a T-shirt, he'll ask you to leave and go home and change and come back. And I've seen him do it. He's very particular about appearance in his courtroom.
So years, and this goes back 20 plus years ago, when I did some small claim stuff in Milwaukee, there was a guy who would come with a hat and a T-shirt, and he was an attorney, but he was like the king of the small claims court. And he would walk up.
A T-shirt?
Like a really fashionable kind of T-shirt. You know, like one of those really cool ones. I don't know. Yeah. I don't own any cool T-shirts, but it didn't have any letters. It was just, you know, whatever. And he had like a Kangol hat. You know, one of those, just a cool hat. I mean, he looked really, really good.
It's like a fedora or?
Kind of like, not like the Eisenberg fedora, but like a Kangol, like the British kind of looking hats.
Oh, okay. Yeah, know? Yeah. The Peaky Blinders?
Kind of, yes, yes. You know that?
I know that one. There we go. That one I got.
So he was wearing that and—
No razors in it, I expect.
I don't know what was going on. But the judge or commissioner, or maybe Liska, or one of those guys, Green, one of the old-timers came up and finally, and this had been going on for months. Finally, somebody came and said, okay, you're breaking the rules. You got to wear a tie. You got to wear, you know— And you can have your sport coat on and then take it off, but you got to at least have a sport coat. So anyway.
Yeah, those were pretty informal proceedings, especially back then.
Yeah. But you can't wear a T-shirt, for goodness sakes, and a hat. So again, going back, now we're beating a dead horse, but it's preposterous that somebody would come to court and be shirtless. I mean, that's unbelievable. And I don't know, how many weeks is this set for trial? What, five?
I think at least four.
At least 4 weeks of trial.
But, that's what it was set for, but I can't imagine it's going to wrap up on schedule with the way things are going so far.
Yeah, with the distractions of now this, where whether the guy's wearing the proper attire.
Yeah.
Now he was removed from the courtroom into a separate room to watch while the prosecution makes their case. Because he's defending himself, right?
Yeah, and I understand that Judge Dora will usually mute him when he's in that other courtroom. So I think he's been holding up signs indicating objection when he has an issue, which is pretty much every 5 minutes.
Oh my gosh.
Like.
There was a trial that our office had last year down at the federal courthouse, right? And you were involved in that, where only some people could be in the courtroom and then others had to be in this, you know, it was maybe like a library or something. I don't recall exactly what it was, but they had a TV, there was a camera. So I can see how certainly with, you know, COVID, they have all this set up so it's somewhat easy. And with all the TVs that are in courtrooms in the beginning, or, you know, just to begin with, the jury can probably see him.
Yeah.
Right? Because with COVID, things change that you can be virtual and be wherever you need and still handle a trial. Yeah. Interesting. So anyway, now I'm not quite sure where we're going with that story, but we talked about shirtless and diamonds and whatever else, Peaky Blinders. But the point is, so where this starts with is the Waukesha Parade, right? So the Waukesha Parade was last year. This Daryl Brooks Jr. is driving his SUV, I'll call
was
it.
I think it was longer than that.
Was it?
I think it was the Christmas before, I thought.
No. COVID messes up everything.
Yeah.
November 20.
I've lost all concept of time.
Yeah, November 21st, 2021.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Right.
So less than a year. Holy smokes.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Wow.
That doesn't seem like it was even that soon. I mean, it's not even been a year yet.
Yeah, I thought that it was longer than a year because a lot of the Christmas parades were canceled. And that was an early Christmas parade in November. So yeah. I live in Whitefish Bay, and I remember every Christmas parade in the community was canceled because of that. So I thought.
Yeah. Just with the fear. Yeah. 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 So he comes through, and do we know, did he have car insurance?
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either.
I believe that he did not have car insurance, and I know that for reasons that I'm not going to say publicly, but I know that he did not. So then what happens? So all these people, I mean, a horrible situation. People have been killed. People have been injured. And then you have the spectators. So how does that work in our world with personal injury attorneys? Is there any way for those victims to get compensation from somebody, some entity?
Yeah. Which, what do you think? Yeah. I mean, if they have insurance. So if you're a pedestrian and you have your own insurance, you can go through your uninsured motorist coverage. If somebody hits you with a vehicle and they don't have insurance.
So then if you're a pedestrian and somebody hits you, they don't have any insurance, your insurance then stands in the shoes of the at-fault person. So they'll, in essence, pretend like they're the insurance for Daryl Brooks Jr. And then after they pay out, what happens? You know what happens?
After uninsured motorist coverage pays out?
Correct. What does uninsured motorist, or what does that insurance company do after they pay out?
Go after the at-fault party.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So then I think that's the next saga here. And that's the next part of the story, is we're going to have all these insurance companies that are paying out these claims for the victims of Daryl Brooks. There's probably, and this you might know, Ryan, you know, victims assistance, the restitution aspect that probably hasn't even been handled yet.
Right. Yeah. Since you didn't have insurance, the victim witness program is a sort of a branch of the DA's office, and they deal with victims in criminal cases. They're sort of the conduit between the DA's office and the victim. And they're the ones that will coordinate with the victims how to get repaid. You know, because it's a criminal case, they're not entitled to get pain and suffering. It's just strictly out-of-pocket expenses. So there'll be a lot of claims made, but frankly, I don't they're not going to get paid. I mean, Mr. Brooks is not ever going to be seeing the light of day. So it's really a sad situation for all the victims' families. And
yeah, hopefully not. Hopefully he doesn't see the light of day. And then I used to know what a prisoner can make while in prison, right?
It's ridiculous.
It's not minimum wage, that's for sure. It's like dollars, just a couple dollars an hour-ish.
Yeah, right. It's very, very little.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, trying to garnish that wage or whatever is going to be...
Probably cost more to for the garnishment.
Exactly.
You're not going to get anything out of it to cover your expenses.
Yeah, yeah. So the uninsured motorist then would stand in the shoes of Daryl Brooks Jr., would pay out for those injured victims, for the kids and the families.
And if the victims didn't have car, let's say that it's a 19-year-old kid who doesn't have a car and he doesn't have car insurance, then he would certainly, I would think, be able to file under his homeowner's insurance or perhaps his parents' homeowner's insurance if he's a resident there. Or,
I don't know. I think if it's a 19-year-old kid with no car insurance.
Or any age, I guess. If they don't have a car, they use public transportation, they don't have car insurance.
So then the only way that you're going to have compensation for injuries because of a car crash is if there's car insurance. And the only way to get into the homeowner's insurance would be if there's an umbrella policy that's tied into the car insurance. So if somebody, some person who was walking the street and hit by Daryl Brooks Jr., and Daryl Brooks Jr. has no insurance, and as the at-fault, he has no insurance, and the victim has no insurance, there's no compensation. Except you could go through the state's victim compensation program, but I think that's limited. I'm not going to say the exact amount, but it's not very much money that you can get. And that also has certain restrictions as to what you can get compensation for.
Yeah. And if you have insurance, that comes first. So you're not going to get paid until that insurance is paid out. So it would be...
And you've got to exhaust all your remedies. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. And then the last thing is, what if there's, well, I guess the reality behind this, for people who don't know this, is there were a lot of kids who were marching in the parade. And those kids who were marching, their parents are sitting there watching them. I mean, I just can't imagine that you're sitting there watching your kid and you don't have the time, you don't have the ability to go get them and pull them out of the way, and you see this guy run them over. You know,
it's
so
horrific.
It's horrific. It's and then to see like the aerial footage we have and all like the businesses with the, you know, with the footage to show what happened, it's shocking. But with that, what kind of claim would the parents have for witnessing this, if any?
That's going to be negligent infliction of emotional distress.
So I just happen to have this, Mitch.
Yeah.
The jury instruction. So why is that important? Why is it important to have the jury instruction?
Because that is what a jury would see.
That's the law.
That's what they'd be instructed upon if it went to trial.
Yeah. So it's...
That's your roadmap, yeah.
The roadmap.
As far as what you need to show.
So there's, and I'll just cut to the chase here. It's jury instruction 15:11. It says, therefore, there are three things that the plaintiff, the victim, must prove by the greater weight of the credible evidence to a reasonable certainty. Number one, that the defendant was negligent with respect to the accident involved in the case. Well, this Daryl Brooks certainly was negligent. Number two, the accident was a cause of the victim's emotional distress. Well, if you're a parent and you see a kid get run over, I think that's pretty clear. And the emotional distress is severe. And that's, I guess, subjective what's severe, but gosh, can't imagine.
Yeah, nothing more severe, I don't think, than seeing your child in that situation.
Now,
yeah.
Is there going to be any issue with, number one, UM coverage because it was an intentional act? Or that, could they argue some kind of exclusion because it was intentional, or would this be intentional infliction of emotional distress?
Yeah.
Because
I think it's a great question. I think the intent might be, you know, his intent was to injure people, but is there a specific intent to injure a specific person, number one, or did he have the requisite intent because he's some psychological evaluation, Ryan. I don't know what that would be called. You know,
I mean, he's been found competent to proceed.
Yeah.
And I know that he was trying, or at least his former counsel was trying to pursue an NGI plea, which is not guilty by reason of mental disease or defect. And that was abandoned by him. So,
yeah.
But by all accounts, you read the articles in the paper, and Sue Opper talks about monitoring his phone calls. And according to Sue Opper, he's been very lucid during these phone calls and has made his intentions known in his phone calls to his mother that he wants to delay these proceedings.
Yeah.
So, I think he's lucid. I think he's competent. And I think he knew what he was doing.
Yeah.
And I think he still knows what he's doing.
Yeah. Yeah. So then what was the intent to injure a certain person, this person or that person, or was the intent to drive through without, you know, the specific intent of injuring any particular person? I know, and I guess it goes back to war stories, you know, years ago I had a case where somebody intended to shoot a turkey, okay? It just so happened that there was a hunter that was also there, and they intended to shoot the turkey. They shot what they thought was a turkey, but they shot the hunter. And this young kid had his leg that was just destroyed by this shotgun, and there was the concern right away that, well, this is intentional because he intended to shoot, but he intended to shoot the turkey, not to shoot the person.
You know, yeah.
That's one thing. So,
and in the criminal realm, there's different phases or different grades of homicide. There's intentional homicide, there's reckless homicide, and there's negligent homicide. It's, you know, certainly if it's intentional homicide, I think you're going to have a hard time prevailing on a claim with the insurance company because it's an intentional act. But reckless homicide, you know, you're not intending the harm, but you're acting with the knowledge that it's substantially likely that harm may ensue.
Yeah.
Yeah, and for negligence, you're acting with the understanding that harm may occur.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So, duty breach caused harm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. All right. Well, we have gone way over our time. This is actually a pretty good one.
I think so.
I like this recording.
Yeah.
Going from diamonds to shirtlessness to actually real serious
law. Gabor?
Gabor?
Yeah.
I got to look him up.
Look
her up.
Yeah. Thank you, Mitch.
Just watch an episode of Green Acres.
Yeah.
Okay.
Have you seen the Green Acres?
What year is that from?
Do you know the song? Green Acres is the place to be.
Well, we were doing well for a while. And now we started singing this.
Now we started show tunes. Yeah.
Green Acres, Zsa Zsa Gabor. How do you think you spell Zsa Zsa?
J-A-J-A.
No, like Jean Morant?
Zsa Zsa. I don't know.
Z-S-A.
Is it Z-S-A?
Z-S-A, yeah.
I was going to say it's C.
No. I'm fairly confident, okay, being a fan of Green Acres and Eddie Arnold. Eddie Albert.
So it's Z-S-A?
Yep.
Oh, my gosh, you're right.
Z-S-A?
How are you right with this? Zsa Zsa Gabor. That's right. Z-S-A. Z-S-A.
Z-S-A, Z-S-A.
I know my old television.
Good job.
Yeah.
That's impressive. Yeah. Anyway, Zsa Zsa Gabor. All right. Thanks, guys. I'll talk to you soon. See ya.
Thank you. Bye.